Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. It has been a surreal couple of days with the country and indeed the world reacting to the tragic death of George Floyd. Yesterday, we saw Weston McKennie pay tribute with a Justice for Floyd armband. Today, Borussia Mönchengladbach's Marcus Thuram took a knee in tribute to the protests going on around the United States after scoring. And also in today's game, we saw both Jadon Sancho and Hakimi reveal justice for George Floyd after their respective goals. Well, Shaka Hislop, Frank LaBeouf and Craig Burley are with us. Shaka, I want to start with you. This tragic death and indeed the protests that have followed seems to have resonated throughout the football world.
Yeah, and understandably so, Dan. Listen, it was Martin Luther King who first said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And that's what you're seeing now. You're seeing footballers using their platforms to push for justice everywhere. This is not just a matter of support for George Floyd. It's not just about black and disenfranchised communities here in the US. This is about injustice everywhere. Sportsmen, I believe, have a responsibility to use their platform to drive social change. You saw that with the peaceful protests of Colin Kaepernick a couple of years ago, in which he was vilified. A peaceful protest that even pushed the U.S. Soccer Federation to pass legislation and to instruct players not to kneel during the national anthem themselves. They have a responsibility in what we're seeing playing out before our very eyes right now. And until everybody accepts that responsibility, until everybody recognizes the hurt, the disenfranchisement of those communities that are playing out during a global pandemic that has also affected the black and communities of color disproportionately from everyone else, until we start to recognize that, we continue to have these discussions. We continue to see the lives of black men taken in front of camera before our own very eyes. And unfortunately, we just keep having these discussions round and round in circles. Riots will continue until something is done, until something is changed.
Frank?
Yeah, I like to see football players, you know, showing to the world that they don't just live in their world, but they pay attention to what's going on in the world. We talk about the educational aspect of football, and I think denouncing injustice is part of it, of the education that we all have to get. We have do have differences of culture, but we all go together to denounce injustice. We saw the FIFA or the UEFA with the Champions League asking to all captains to wear an armband saying no racism. So politics is already in our world, a world of football. So I think it's not something that I don't like when I see a player just saying what he is denouncing. And I wasn't surprised to see Marcus Thuram, for example, because I know Lilian, my former teammate, who works for a charity to make sure that injustice will stop in the world.
Craig?
Well, as Shaka said, you know, sports people in particular, footballers, have a platform. And I think it's no surprise that the players are using this platform to show their support and their unity. The black players in particular and others have been fighting to get racism out of football for years and years and years now. It was something we talked about before lockdown, where this continued, particularly in Italy, where there was a lot of serious incidents. It happened in other countries, but particularly in Italy. So the players themselves recognised how problematic this is. And when you see an incident as serious as the one that happened here in America with a man losing his life, it's no surprise to see players coming out in support, particularly the black players. And I think we're going to see more and more of that from all corners and from all different groups coming out in support. And I'm sure we'll see teammates supporting other teammates as well, as they have done when players have been racially abused from the crowds, from supporters. So it's something the players have been fighting against for years and years. And as I say, when they see it happening on the streets to the public, and it is so public and it is on camera, and it is so clear, it is understandable, Dan, that the players are going to show unity to individuals.
Last word on this for you, Shaq.
Yeah, I think, listen, for all of us, it's time for us to have some of those uncomfortable conversations about dealing with racism and how it's affected people in the communities that I'm from, that I grew up in, that I continue to live in. At the same time, it's got to go a whole lot further than just those discussions. We have to have those talks with our kids as well. And at the highest ends of both our not just in politics, but in football and governing bodies, I am also recognizing that this is a show that largely talks about football. And Frank spoke about it, about the acts that UEFA and in particular FIFA have enacted. Players walk out with armbands that say no to racism, yet at the highest levels in Zurich, Gianni Infantino, in one of his first acts as becoming FIFA president, disbanded the FIFA commission on racism. Offering a rather flimsy excuse that the fight against racism is a fight for all of us. I mean, at some point, somebody has to show some leadership in dealing with the ills of society and how they impact the game that we love.
It's never easy. As Shaka said, this is a soccer show, to make a transition to what we've just been talking about, to a match which is, let's face it, pretty much insignificant compared to what we've seen take place around the world over the last couple of days. But we will move on and we will do that. And we will talk about Borussia Dortmund's victory today against Paderborn, where one man stole the show, Craig. Jadon Sancho with the hat-trick. A man who we discussed actually a lot over the last few days on this programme, after Delaney's comments about him, whether or not mentally he was ready for all the pressure of being regarded as one of the best in the world. Well, it was a pretty nice answer in the second half today.
Yeah, I don't think he's there yet. He's certainly one of the best youngsters in world football, but, you know, that's sort of where it ends. He's still got a long way to go, as talented as he is. Look, I think when you look at a player's body language, you look at performances, you take into account his age and what kind of games he's played in, I don't think there's any shortage of belief in Jadon Sancho about where he's going to go. There's no shortage of confidence. You may call it arrogance, but players are confident. You know, the players of his talent are super confident. And whilst the first 45 minutes was actually a giant bore and he didn't perform particularly well, things just opened up for him. And, you know, as the space opened up, he utilised his pace, he utilised his finishing. The first one was laid on a plate for him by Julian Brandt. But again, he's got 17 goals now. He's in with the assists as well. But it all just come a bit too late, Dan, for Borussia Dortmund, because it seemed after last week's defeat to Bayern Munich that the stuffing had been knocked out of them. And it's all very well beating the Paderborns of this world, who are bottom of the league, 6-1 away from home. But really and truly, the big performance was needed last week when, of course, he wasn't deemed fit enough to play from the start and only saw him for the second 45 minutes. But today, a big performance from him. And their quest for getting in the Champions League, because that's what they're fighting for now.
Craig, we talked about it, didn't we, after the defeat against Bayern Munich. Hindsight, of course, a wonderful thing. But given what he did in the second half here, you were right, weren't you? He should have started in that game against Bayern.
Well, as I say, it's a bit different doing it against a Paderborn team who are bottom of the league and who've opened up, and they've just given a goal away for Hazard, and it was a mistake from the goalkeeper. And then things just start to unravel, as they do when you're a struggling side. Look, would he have made a difference playing from the start? I don't know, Dan, but I would like to have seen, and Jan Fjotov, our colleague, talked about it, bringing Chan back in for his experience, bringing Sancho in for his pace. Lucien Favre decided not to do that, and ultimately they didn't get the result.
Frank, Jadon Sancho becoming the youngest player ever in the history of the Bundesliga to make it to 30 goals. How highly do you rate him?
Well, not at the best. And as Craig said, he's not there yet, but definitely a future of football. He shows his talents. He have to be more consistent, that's for sure. But having the statistics that he has, you already have to be at a good, very, very good level. I'm waiting a little bit more from him. I'm waiting for more from him, because I want to see more consistency again. When you see the awful first half that he showed us today, with the fantastic second half that he was able to score 3 goals, show that he needs to improve a little bit his performances mentally wise, I think. But definitely a future that we have to follow. And I think if I have an advice, if I may, maybe if he listens to us, is grow grow a little bit more in a very good club before going somewhere else when the pressure will be bigger and bigger. I think about Manchester United, where it was going to come for more than 100 million euros or pounds, and have a pressure of a star where I presume is not yet. And maybe he can grow up more for one more years to make sure that he can stand to any pressure in the world.
It's interesting advice, isn't it, Shat? Because Manchester United, if I were them, I'd want to get it done now when the market is very much a buyer's market. You give Sancho another season at Dortmund. Who knows how much more he can grow? And of course, then he can attract, no offence to Manchester United, clubs that are really fighting for titles, be it domestically or the Champions League as well. So if you're Jadon Sancho, you're pretty much holding all the cards at the moment. What would you do?
I'm with Frank in that maybe he can stay at Borussia Dortmund for another season or two, and then it opens up a whole lot more options for him. The issue is, and just to counter what Frank was saying, I mean, we can't really be criticising a 20-year-old for showing a lack of consistency. He's 20 years old. It comes with the territory. And other than Kylian Mbappe, I'm not sure that world football has seen someone at that age play at that level and with any kind of consistency or greater consistency than we're seeing from Jadon Sancho right now. The beauty of it for Jadon Sancho from his perspective is that there's no wrong answer to this. You can move to one of world football's big clubs who maybe has been underperforming over recent seasons in Manchester United, back into an environment that you know and you're comfortable with, and you know you will thrive, and Manchester United will give you the opportunities and the platform to be at your very best. Or you can do exactly the same at Borussia Dortmund. If you continue in the vein that you have been over the last 18 months, 2 years, you know that the biggest clubs in world football, regardless of who they are and where they are and where they play, will all be knocking at your door, and then you can play them off against each other. That's a good place to be in for a 20-year-old, consistent or not.
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, I'm inclined to think another 12 months will not do him any harm at Borussia Dortmund for a couple of reasons, and the boys have touched on most of them. But the other reason is he's very much in the forefront of Gareth Southgate's mind for the Euros. Now, obviously, the Euros have been pushed back a year, which means going into next summer's tournament, he really has to be playing regular. Now, I'm not saying if he goes to a Man United or even a Liverpool or somewhere like that, he won't play, but he might, and there's always a question mark, he might not play as regular depending on form. I mean, United, even within the constraints of their financial budgets because of this pandemic, will still go out and beef up that squad, you would imagine, as will Liverpool. These are the kind of clubs that will be looking at Jadon Sancho. So, you know, getting playing time becomes more difficult sometimes when you make that move. But as the boys have said, he's almost guaranteed when fit to be playing regular and flourishing in the Bundesliga with Dortmund. And with the Euros coming up next year, he's at the forefront of Gareth Southgate's mind whilst he is playing. And that's a big decision for a young man to make.
The other side of that same coin, Craig, is that with the Euros, speaking of the Euros, not just about playing, but if he is and does for Gareth Southgate and lights the Euros up, then all of a sudden, the floodgates open, as we discussed before.
Last point on this for you, Frank.
I'm ready to hold back or to get back to what I said about the consistency to please Shaka, because it's true. I've been a little bit harsh on Jadon, well, because he's young. It's true. But when I see Mbappe, every time I see Mbappe, it's true that I see something special, even if he's not in a good in his best. So it's why I've been a little bit harsh on Sancho. But just one thing, really, I don't talk about the history of the two clubs. When I compare Manchester United, because we're thinking about Jadon Sancho going to Manchester United, and Borussia Dortmund, of course, in the history of the two clubs, Manchester United is far way better. But nowadays, is it better to play for Dortmund or is it better to play for Manchester United? Football-wise, I'm asking you. I don't give you the answer.
Well, we know that Craig hates Manchester United, so he's just going to say Dortmund.
The answer is it may well be a good time to go to Man United with a rebuild under Solskjaer, who I'm still not convinced is the man, but United fans, most of them seem to think he is. But I don't have any doubt that they'll go and at least give them the tools to try and do the job. Because it is a rebuild. So we just don't know. I mean, when this Premier League season restarts, and at the moment it is restarting and it looks like it may finish, we just don't know where United are going to be. They're going to be in the European places, going to be in the Champions League places, going to be in the Europa League places. We just don't know that because it's so tightly packed around that area. So there's lots of questions out there in terms of where United are going to be in a few weeks' time, never mind a few months' time.
But at the same time, you asked Erling Haaland that exact same question just a couple of months ago, and we all know what his answer was.
What a note to end on. Thank you very much, boys. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
As promised, let's welcome into the show now then Gab Marcotti and Sid Lowe. Sid, I want to start with you, with reports from Marker that basically because of the money lost during the pandemic, Real Madrid can pretty much forget any transfers this summer.
Well, sort of. What Marker did today was write the story that they said that Havertz had a deal with Real Madrid very, very well on track, that it was very likely to happen, but because of the doubts that this pandemic have caused, that's a deal that might now not happen. Now, I think that's different, obviously, from looking at this in terms of saying, right, Real Madrid will not move. I think what it does is it tells you the position that a number of clubs in Spain are in, particularly, actually, the bigger clubs, in terms of looking at the summer and thinking, all right, what can we genuinely afford? And, of course, the first step towards being able to make really big deals, although it seems like we're talking about very big ones at Barcelona, is getting players out. Now, from Real Madrid's point of view, that means finding a place for Gareth Bale, it means finding a place for James Rodriguez, and it means trying to generate some money through those players. They don't know if they're going to be able to do so, and so at the moment there's a huge amount of caution, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that this means Real Madrid will do nothing. What it means fundamentally is what we all know, which is there's a huge amount of uncertainty now about how the transfer market will go.
So if they couldn't get rid of James and Gareth Bale last summer when they tried, and we know they tried hard, 12 months on it's going to be even more difficult, isn't it, given the current situation?
That's what logic suggests, doesn't it? But of course you have to remember that last year they didn't manage to get rid of James or Gareth Bale based on a series of criteria, based on a series of desires from Real Madrid's point of view and from the players' point of view, which can have shifted over 12 months. Now, to take Gareth Bale as the best possible example, Gareth was genuinely on the verge of going to China, and at that point Real Madrid thought, well, maybe we can get some money out of this club here. That was misjudged. That meant the deal didn't go through. But at that point, I think Real Madrid thought, well, it's not such a bad thing that the deal didn't go through. They'd just been beaten by Atletico Madrid in pre-season training, which was, by the way, one of the reasons why they didn't confirm the deal of James Rodriguez to Atletico Madrid. And they thought, right, we'd rather stick with these players. Obviously, 12 months on, and given that a negotiation is always about a whole series of parties reaching an agreement, the resolve to reach certain agreements shifts. The desire to make an agreement happen shifts. So it's not impossible, but you're absolutely right to suggest that both Bale and James and a whole load of other players, I mean, Felipe Coutinho is a brilliant example of this at Barcelona, there's a whole load of players who I think are partly trapped by what they cost. And it means that finding a proper resolution to their situation is really quite difficult for a number of big clubs.
So given all of that, how come when we talk about Barcelona, we're talking about them maybe spending 100 million on Lautaro Martinez? What's different in their camp, or is there anything different?
No, I mean, look, in terms of the nuts and bolts of it, there is nothing different. But what is different, of course, is the determination, the belief that Barcelona have that they absolutely need to make this signing happen, and the belief that they have, and here we go back to what we've just been saying about James and about Gareth Bale and indeed about Philippe Coutinho. They believe they have players that they can get rid of that can generate the money to make these deals happen. I must confess, I'm not at all convinced by that. So I think it's very difficult to make these deals happen, but it doesn't mean that they don't want to.
We've talked about that a lot. Sid, Gab and Jules mentioned it on their podcast. We brought it up again on Friday's show. Talking about the fact that Barcelona made this kind of mistake with Neymar last year, thinking that they could just throw a whole load of players that they didn't want at PSG and they'd be like, yeah, go on, we'll take them, you have Neymar. It seems to be a year down the line they're doing the same. This time, though, with Lautaro Martinez. You know, from the outside looking in, it looks rather foolish. Is this being accepted in Catalonia as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's also very difficult because, of course, you know, it's not just a case of, as you said, you know, it's not just a case of saying to Paris Saint-Germain or in this case Inter Milan, look, here's a catalogue of our players, you know, here's our catalogue, there's 15 players in there, choose two or choose three or choose four or however many it is. You've then got to persuade those players to do it. And, of course, last summer we had the pretty embarrassing spectacle of Barcelona trying to encourage people like Ivan Rakitic to leave and people like Ivan Rakitic saying, well, no, I don't want to go. I don't see a reason to go. And by the way, if I go, I'll go on my terms to the club that I want to go to, not to the one that you try and push me into. And so while I think we may well see a summer, and Gab will have a view on this, you know, across the whole of Europe, not just involving Spain, I think we may well see a summer in which we see more clubs trying to do deals that don't involve cash or don't involve as much cash. We may well see some kind of trading going on. But generally speaking, deals that involve the move of more than one player, that involve trades, are really quite difficult to make happen. And in particular, they're difficult to make happen if you don't even bother to tell those players you're trying to force them out until the last minute, which is what happened last year.
Gab, a real-life deal, though, did actually happen over the last couple of days. Mauro Icardi's move to PSG becoming permanent. What does that mean regarding Lautaro Martinez and his future at Inter? Does it mean that he's more likely to stay now?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, it means Inter take a huge, huge sigh of relief because they had counted on that money. It's a little bit less than they'd hoped for when he went on loan. But ultimately, it's still an enormous amount of money. And it's still hugely significant that you get Mauro Icardi's wages off your books if you're Inter. I think what it also does, in terms of Lautaro, is that, you know, if Lautaro, unless Lautaro goes to them and says, you know, screw this, I want to leave, I want to go to Barcelona, I'm going to refuse to play unless you sell me, and there's zero indication that he's going to do that, then it also means that, you know, if you feel like you need to extend his contract, give him another bump or do something like that, you have that little bit more wiggle room to play with. And going back to what Sid said, I completely agree. I think just talking to agents and stuff, you get the sense that a lot of clubs that do have a prize asset who they'd be willing to sell, you know, whether it's Havertz or Sancho, you know, viewed from the other end, those guys are saying, well, let's not sell him this summer because, you know, frankly, it's a buyer's market out there. Very few teams actually have cash, actually have liquidity. Let's hang on to him for a season. And then a year from now, when the market hopefully has ticked up, let's see where we are. And the one exception on the swap deals is swaps between clubs who have huge wage bills. And that's why I think those proposed swap deals between Barcelona and Juventus, for example, are slightly different because you're swapping people who've got comparable, you're trying to swap players who've got comparable contracts in terms of wages. And if you can pull that off, then through the magic of amortization, you've essentially on your balance sheet created money out of thin air. And so that's appealing. But, you know, getting guys in out or getting guys out who are huge wages, it's extremely, extremely difficult. And I think that's what Barcelona are realizing.
Sid mentioned Coutinho as well. Gab, obviously Barca looking to get rid of the Brazilian. It was Arsenal a couple of days ago. Chelsea within the last 24 hours. This is just going to go on. Basically, any big club is going to be linked to Coutinho, aren't they?
Yeah, and so you're going to ask yourself the question is, you know, how motivated is he? Do I think I can get him round? Obviously, he's on enormous wages, so can you get Barcelona to chip in with some of those wages? What sort of a clause can I insert to make the deal permanent in case he does work out? And can he help me? There's no question he's a very talented player, but I think what's going to happen is that at some point, Quique Setién's going to say, you know what? Why don't I have a go with Coutinho? You know, it didn't work out before. That was Valverde. Maybe I've got more luck with him. Maybe I end up keeping him around. And I think from Barcelona's perspective, while you would take a hit in terms of wages, it's a better option than just letting him go on a very bad deal where, you know, you either just literally give him away or you have to pay a portion of his wages when he's on loan to somewhere who's never going to keep him beyond a season. So those are decisions that Barcelona might have to make down the road. And I just hope for the club's sake, you know, they really allow Setién to also have his say in terms of, can I salvage Coutinho? What do I think? Can I work with him? Because, you know, there is a good player in there.
Sid?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, at least it's certainly the way I see it as well. I mean, that, you know, there's been a lot of talk all the way through this whole season that, you know, what do you do with a problem like Coutinho? And to pick up where Gab's left off, what do you do with a problem like Coutinho? You play him. You play him, because if you're in a scenario in which any kind of exit strategy is not particularly good, and that's quite likely, then why not take the risk that actually, under a different type of manager, with a different type of team, with a different style, you can actually find a place for him. I also think, for what it's worth, that Coutinho's kind of disastrous spell at Barcelona has been overstated. I don't think he was anything like as disastrous as being made out. No, he wasn't a huge success. But I agree with Gab. I think there's a player in there. And I think if you look at the options and you think that none of these exit strategies really work, then the solution is, well, maybe not the solution, because who knows, it might not work out. But it's got to be worth thinking about, hey, how about this player we own, who's very good, who we paid a lot of money for, how about we put him in the team?
Last point, so it's the first time that we've been on since La Liga confirmed there would be, what, 30 days of consecutive matches in Spain. We go from famine to feast, don't we? Why? Why are they doing it this way?
Well, very simply, because this is what they want to do in terms of maximising TV audience. They believe that they... I mean, look, there's two elements, right? One is the maximising of TV audience, having games on all the time, try and make sure people are sitting in front of the set all the way through this month. The other, of course, is to try and accelerate the process. Now, you don't necessarily need to play every day to accelerate the process, because, of course, you can have a round of games spread across 7 days, you could have it spread across three, and it doesn't make any difference in terms of how quickly you get to the end of the season. But they do want to give themselves 2 weeks grace at the end of the season before European competition starts, just in case, for whatever reason, they have to slow things down or take a pause. But fundamentally, it's to get people watching it, and to get people watching it as much as they possibly can. One small thing that probably needs to be thrown into the mix here is they may not actually be able to do this, because La Liga is committed to having unified kickoff times in the final 2 weeks of the season. So, in other words, if we get to those 2 weeks of the season and there's still a lot in play, then there are teams that are going to have to play at the same time as each other. If games are interlocking in terms of the consequences, in terms of the league table, whether it's relegation or the title race or European positions. So it may well be that as we get into the last 2 weeks, which obviously, given the way it's compressed, will be the last 2 weeks compressed into the last 8 days, that those can't actually occupy every single day.
How are Italy going to handle it, Gab? Are we going to see it every day as well?
Not by design, but, you know, in Italy, we're in a situation where we've got to make up 128 Serie A games, plus, of course, two Coppa Italia semifinals and the final. So obviously the season will, as the plan goes, will start off with the Coppa Italia semifinals on the 17th of June, and then the final on the 20th, and then the next match day, will be making up those 8 games that have yet to be played. And then hopefully at that point, those games in hand, if you will, everybody will be on level footing. And what they're looking to do is to play, you know, have sort of a Friday through Monday weekend. But then you've got the midweek round, and that will likely be Tuesday to Thursday. So effectively, when you have midweek rounds, you will end up with a game every day. There's a lot of negotiations to make sure that the games are played at night, as far as possible. Nobody needs to go and to be out there in 100 degree heat in Sicily or whatnot, or Naples. So they're going to go and work on those things, but it's all up in the air. I think June 8th, we're actually going to get a real semblance of what the calendar is going to look like once we get past those initial Coppa Italia games.
Boys, thank you very much. By the way, to keep up to date with all the latest transfer news, you can go over to our website and click on Transfer Talk. Gab Marcotti still with us as we welcome back Frank Leboeuf as well. Gab, Allegri to PSG. Where on earth has this come from?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Max Allegri, obviously, he's taken his year's sabbatical. His assistant, Aldo Dolcetti, was in England learning English. He's looked around Europe. He wants a big club. I think there's a level of realism that there might not be that many jobs open. And among the jobs that could be open, potentially, depending how things end with Thomas Tuchel, could be Paris Saint-Germain, where obviously he knows Leonardo well. But I'm not 100% convinced that job will, in fact, be open and that Tuchel isn't going to stick around.
This is weird, isn't it, Frank? Because we're going to have to wait until really August to find out the resolution of this, because it's all about how PSG do in the Champions League. Of course, made it through to the quarterfinals with that comeback win against Borussia Dortmund. But I suppose if they go out in the quarterfinals and get completely mullered by someone, does that necessarily mean the end of Tuchel? Or does the fact that everything has transpired over the last few months, he hasn't played, etc., does that give PSG a pass, and Thomas Tuchel in particular?
Well, it's hard to answer. I would say that seeing what we see every game we see in the Bundesliga, with players getting fitter and fitter, we discovered that when they restart, that they had a problem physically. And Paris Saint-Germain, having not the chance to play because the Ligue 1 is shut down, give very little chance to go through if they can play in the Champions League. Meaning that if Tuchel is judged by those games, he will go, because I don't think Paris Saint-Germain will go through. So it opens a door or room for a window for Allegri. I don't know what's going to happen, but now the main concern I think about Paris Saint-Germain is how to go back to fitness to have a chance to go through in the next leg of the Champions League. That's the main question.
Where do you stand on Thomas Tuchel, Frank? Has he got enough money in the bank, do you feel, considering what he's achieved at PSG so far, that no matter what happens in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, he should be okay?
The problem is, I think he has a talent. I think he should have a chance to carry on. But I think between him and Mbappe, it's not a peaceful relationship. Some words have been said in the dressing room and outside the dressing room from the two person, and it's hard to see Mbappe staying if Tuchel is staying as well. So we all know that Tuchel is doing the best he can to make sure that Neymar and Mbappe love him, but I think it's not really the case. I think what Paris Saint-Germain is wondering is if they have a big name like Allegri with a background, with lots of trophy won. Are they recovered by that name to make sure that Neymar and Mbappe will just think about playing football and will not go everywhere doing crazy stuff?
Gab, how stable is Tuchel's position?
I mean, I think that's one of the questions, right? The odd thing about Tuchel is he came in as a guy who, you know, had very specific ideas about how he wanted to play, and, you know, was perhaps a little bit, you know, very much a system coach. And I think what we're seeing this season is he's kind of had to be a band manager. I think if you're managing Neymar and Mbappe, you know, you can't go and just force them into little holes, treat them like little cogs in your machine. And I think he's done a good job on that part in managing them. You know, obviously he's had his ups and downs with Mbappe. But I'm not 100% clear on how strong his position is, because, you know, to be honest, Mauro Icardi is a guy who comes in with baggage, and he's a guy who comes in that, you know, implies Mbappe will be playing wide again. And I don't know if that is the sort of decision that Thomas Tuchel would have necessarily made at this juncture of his career. It seems to me like Leonardo is upstairs calling the shots, and I'll throw this one out to you even more. I wonder if bringing in Allegri doesn't mean perhaps laying the groundwork for maybe one day a grand retour, a great return, reuniting Allegri with Paul Pogba.
Last point on the PSG, Gab. Icardi staying now permanently. What does this mean for Cavani? Suggestions he's going to Inter.
Well, I don't think he's going to Inter. Piero Risiglio knocked that down. I thought it would have been an absolutely idiotic move. They were talking like a 3-year deal. And Cavani's wages are huge. You don't need to bring in Cavani to sit on the bench behind Lukaku, although Inter do need a striker. I think Icardi's obviously going to stay around. Cavani's out of contract. I'm sure he'll find a home somewhere. But the rational thing for Paris Saint-Germain to do, in my opinion anyway, is at this stage, is to have Icardi as your center forward, and then you can muddle through. In some games, Mbappe can play center forward, or you've got Eric Choupo-Moting as a cheap and cheerful option domestically against the terrible teams, and you'll be fine. So I don't think there's much of an issue. If you committed that kind of money to Icardi, it means that Icardi is going to be your center forward and your starting center forward.
Do you agree, Frank, that you shouldn't fight too hard to keep Cavani?
Yes, unfortunately, because he's somebody that I like. I think he's somebody that the fans adore. But that seems to be the end of the story with Paris Saint-Germain Cavani. Icardi signing, as Gab said, there is no point to keeping Cavani, because Cavani is not going to play. Because again, as Gab said, Mbappe can play striker, Choupo-Moting can be also a striker there. So there is no future for Cavani. And if Cavani wants to have a decent end of a career, I think he needs to go somewhere else.
There is also a future for Frank Leboeuf. He will be joining us on Extra Time today, reunited with Craig Burley. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel as the boys answer your tweets.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
We alluded to it earlier, Borussia Mönchengladbach with a 4-1 victory over Union Berlin earlier today. And that mixed things up quite nicely when you look at the top four now. Gladbach returned to third, 2 points clear of Bayer Leverkusen, who of course take on Bayern Munich next week. Meanwhile, for Leipzig, a big game for them tomorrow. They take on FC Köln. Köln in action and looking to move themselves up the table. They currently sit in 11th. Well, that brings us to the end of today's ESPN FC. Thank you very much to Gab Marcotti, to Sid Lowe, to Shaka Hislop. And if you would like more of Craig Burley and Frank Leboeuf, and we all want to hear Frank's Scottish accent, well, fear not, it features in today's Extra Time. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Two heavyweights with us today, Frank Leboeuf and Craig Burley. Craig, the first question for you. What a way to start.
What do you
start.
Mean? Are you
Tell
calling
us the best.
Spot?
No, I just mean regards to your achievements, your aura in the show. Very much, you know, headliners, I would suggest.
Hold on. What's this try to be? Somebody told you have to try to be nice to Frank and I, or what? What is it?
I don't know, I didn't preempt it. It was just the first thing that came out of my mouth.
I know, but I bet you phone our boss after the show and say, I don't really like working with those two. You know what I mean? It's like, can't we do any better?
Can't we do any better? Leave that to DeSevi. Leave it to DeSevi. Right, Craig, tell us the best quality of Frank.
Wow.
But he's very quiet. Shut up, Frank, was something that he heard quite a lot in training. Shut up! Shut up!
You can't find something any better?
I've known Frank for years. I won't embarrass him. But, you know, we needed somebody... The game loves somebody that can come out the back and pass the ball and defend. Frank was a defender. But Frank was a very good long passer of the ball from the back, and that was something that we utilised very well.
Go on then, Frank. What was Craig's best quality?
His looks.
I appreciate his analysis about football. I think he knows football very well. I love the way he speaks, the way he analyses everything. In terms of football, per se, he was a perfect midfielder in the way that you know that he knows how to defend. He knew how to counterattack and to finish the attack. So he was a complete football player, and I'm not surprised that he was international, that he played for big clubs, and that he had a great career, and now he's a great talent.
It's the most sycophantic start to extra time we've ever had in our lives. Let's move on.
Well, you started it with your stupid two heavyweights there, Frank and Craig, you know, and all that nonsense.
Yeah, true.
Frank, is Robert Lewandowski becoming the greatest number nine of his generation? Who is better in their prime, Lewandowski or Aguero?
Hot. They are completely different players. Hard to compare. Two fantastic players. They play in different championships. I would like to see Lewandowski playing for Manchester City to be able to compare. You know what I mean? Or seeing Aguero in Bayern Munich to compare. I think Aguero has been very, very consistent to what he did, except that with injuries that he had. But very consistent. Lewandowski, is somebody that I like because I like something on top of his football style. Is the talent that he has, the gesture that he proposes, and I really like Lewandowski, Aguero, but it's impossible for me to compare them.
No, but if you had to choose,
I go for Lewandowski. For me, he's a more complete player. Aguero is a finisher. I'm not sure Aguero can create a goal. Meaning taking the ball from half of the pitch and maybe dribbling, taking on some players and scoring. Lewandowski seems to have something else. And it's why I prefer Lewandowski.
Craig?
Yeah, I love them both, obviously, to watch. But if I was picking the team now and I wanted the best man up front, I would pick... I agree with Frank. I would go with Lewandowski. I think he's the best natural... number nine on the planet at the moment, has been for quite some time. Aguero's pushing him. Harry Kane has come into the fore for sure over the last couple of years, up until his injury there. But
we're not talking about Harry Kane. Is it only Lewandowski or Aguero? Just those two.
Sorry? Yeah, no.
It's only Lewandowski or Aguero.
Dafty.
Right, good. You'd have to keep going. It's fine. Next question. Frank.
I didn't know you were directing.
Who is the most important?
That's all right.
Who is the most important player to Chelsea, Frank? Drogba, Terry or Lampard?
In fact, I'm hesitating between Terry and Lampard. Drogba had difficult seasons at first. Terry and
I'll
Lampard have been
you,
very,
Frank.
Very...
Come on.
Yeah. What? I go for John Terry for the amount of years that he played for Chelsea, what he got, and Frank Lampard has been absolutely outstanding, scoring so many goals. But Terry was a captain. I think if you name the first name for Chelsea, you talk about Terry. Then comes Lampard straight after.
Craig, did you win the World Cup, by the way, of the most hated Chelsea player in history?
No, I lost to, unfortunately, I lost to Chris Sutton, which I was a bit peeved about. But yeah, I lost to Chris, but I made the final, beat all these people that are now the most hated including Gordon Jury, my old teammate from Scotland, who said he wanted to leave Chelsea and go back north, thinking Scotland, and he went 10 miles north to Tottenham. So he's very well hated. But I was so disappointed that I wasn't the most hated, because I'd written a speech. And I've had to... I spent hours on that speech, and I didn't win.
So you're the second most hated former Chelsea player.
Well, amongst a certain group of people, yes. But apparently, you're not allowed to have an opinion now. But that's fine. That's fine. You've got to toe the party line. That's what you've got to do. John Terry's the answer anyway to the question, I think. Frank pointed that out. He was the guy that glued everything together for many, many a year, both behind the scenes and on the pitch.
Frank, who are some of your favourite Ligue 1 players, apart from the usual suspects from PSG? Give us one other player away from PSG that you like to watch.
That I like to watch. Dimitri Payet, when he's at his best. Who else? I'm looking for...
Do you watch the French League or what?
I do, but it's not that good. It's not that good. And you have players that I like, but who can...
Well, Nabil Fekir was a good one to watch.
Steve Mandanda, the goalkeeper of Marseille. He was absolutely outstanding this year. Best player.
Okay. After our discussion last week, Craig, did you test your pace by running down a hill outside your house?
I haven't got to that yet, because I had my parachute on. Somebody brought it up yesterday again. I saw somebody tweet out and said, oh, I just love numbers. He's running at 34 point. He didn't have to run very fast yesterday in that game against Dusseldorf, because did you see the goal Davies got? The Dusseldorf defender just lay down for him. It was embarrassing. So, no, I haven't. I'm not up to speed yet, excuse the pun, because I'm training for it. Because I think I can talk Alfonso Davies in the speed front. I think I'll get him.
Yeah, we'd like to see that. Yeah. Oh, here we go, Frank. Yeah. It's going to take ages. What is your best memory from the 96-97 season? Can you tell us about the FA Cup tie against Leicester City?
Oh, yes. We went to extra time against Leicester City. It was, I think, in the quarter final or the leg before, maybe. And I saved during the normal time. I saved it on the line with the header. I remember, because I think the unpleasant guy of Leicester, because I scored so many goals against Leicester. And in that game, Alan Johnson, pretended that it was a penalty, and we can say it now because it wasn't a penalty. And I scored that goal, and I think it was the 116th minute, and we went through because of that. So sorry for Leicester fans, but a good decision for the referee at the end of the day. It was a great memory. The best memory, of course, is the final at Wembley when we won against Middlesbrough, because it was my first trophy. And the first year at Chelsea, and that was absolutely outstanding with the fans after the game, and I always put my first FA Cup final at the same level as my World Cup trophy, because the atmosphere with the club, the fans, after 25 or 26 years without winning anything, was absolutely fantastic.
Final question. Could Frank play a grouchy Scotsman with the accent and all if they made a movie about the life of Craig Burley? Title of movie, Crabby Craig, The Battling Burley, The Last King of Scotland. How is your Scottish accent, Frank?
Hey. Have you seen the three Greek? Greek! Freedom! Freedom, Craig Burley! That's the best I can do.
Oh. Why does your voice go so high?
I don't know, because I want to be like Mel Gibson, you know, shouting to these people to make sure that Scotland will be freed. That's it. Freedom! Freedom!
How's he going to play me? I've got too much hair.
That's true. You have to wear a wig, Frank.
Yeah, he'd need to play Robbo. talking about about wing backs.
When I shot The Theory of Everything, at first they wanted me to wear a wig. Because at that time that where the movie was normally stands, it was in the 80s and nobody was bald. And so they wanted me to wear a wig. And I'm so pleased that the producer said, no, okay, you can stay like that. I was so happy.
You don't need to wear a wig, Frank.
Wait, nobody was bald in the 80s.
All you got to do is turn your head upside down. Bish, bash, bosh.
Yes. No, nobody, of course people were bald, but nobody was shaving completely his head. You looked like a skinhead. It wasn't nice to be bald, completely bald right. Like that.
There we go. That is it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. ESPN FC will return tomorrow. Keep your tweets coming in.
Goodbye, my friend.
Oh, God. Stop it.